Hi, everyone. Welcome back to the Turbo Time podcast. I'm your host, Alyssa Maripodi, the editor of Turbo Machinery International. And on today's episode, we are taking a deep dive into the biomass industry with Chris Chiano, the director of operations at IHI Power Services. And we'll be talking about the state of the industry, some challenges working with biomass, and then, of course, where the industry is headed. So welcome, Chris. I'm really happy we were able to connect. Thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you. I appreciate being here.
So let's just start with an overview of the biomass industry. Can you kind of give us, a macro view of it, and then maybe what percentage of energy consumption it accounts for?
Sure. So, when we talk about biomass, at least from my perspective, we're talking about the woody biomass side of the industry. My experience has been in the California area, and California has, a majority of the woody biomass power plants in the nation. So currently right now, there's 23 operational biomass power plants in California. And, this industry has been around since the 80s. I kind of wanted to go into a little bit of what exactly is woody biomass. I'm not sure everyone knows that. There's actually three different types of woody biomass that we use at the plants. These are urban, we call it urban material. So that's like your green garbage cans, the branches, a tree service comes out and thins your tree. That ends up or can be used at our biomass plants. And then you have your ag material, agricultural material, which is, if you have orchards in the Central Valley, California, those orchards only produce fruit for so many years, they have to knock them down. That material can be used at the biomass plants to make energy. And then you have your forest material. When I say forest, we aren't going out there and cutting down healthy trees just to make power. This is the low value material that has no other real use. So we're talking, a sawmill company comes in and they take down a number of trees. They take the merchantable lumber out of that, and then we get the slash, the smaller tree limbs, the smaller branches, the material that this just they can't use themselves. So those are kind of like the three types. And again, I kind of want to reiterate that it's really the low value material. There's no other uses for it. We aren't taking healthy wood and putting it into our boilers to make power. It just doesn't make sense financially. When I talked about there's no other uses, I mean, this material can sit in a dump or a landfill somewhere, or, other alternatives are they open burn it, they put it in a pile and just burn it. And all those emissions and all that smoke goes into the atmosphere with absolutely no use except for getting rid of it. Or you just leave it in the forest to rot. And that, will release greenhouse gases as it rots. Also, in California, and unfortunately, I've heard people say it's become the new norm, like, oh, it's fire season, we're going to have a big fire. And part of that reason is we aren't keeping our forests healthy. Fire is a natural part of cleaning the forest out. It eliminates some of the smaller saplings that are compete with the bigger trees, the pine needles that are all over the floor, the limbs that are all over the forest floor. Unfortunately, with humans have decided that, fire is bad. So we put out fires, and now the forests in California have become extremely dense and extremely full of nature's debris, if you want to call it that. And that's why, the fires in California have been so bad. These fires are able to spread into the canopy of the crowns of the tree. And we have these catastrophic fires that fortunately have, caused, a lot of people to lose homes and worse. So on top of that, that's the forest side of it. And on the ag side of it, in the Central Valley, there's a lot of orchards, a lot of agricultural properties down there. And they don't have as many outlets for this material. So they've been piling it up and burning it. Again, like I said earlier, it's just releasing emission smoke particulate into the air. And then unfortunately right now in biomass in California, it's actually turning down, unfortunately. There's a lot of clients that were not given new contracts, and the ownership groups decided that we can't compete on the market, so we're going to shut these plants down. And some of them have been shut down so long that there's no way they're coming back. Some of the plants that recently shut down, there might be a chance for them to come back, but you know, it's just leading to higher levels of pollution. It's leading to a loss of a lot of jobs in these rural communities. So it's something that, you know, we're looking to change. And on top of it all, I can tell you that, you know, on average, one of our plants, let's say, uses 220,000 tons of material. That's really hard to kind of put in your mind, like, what does that actually look like? And what that actually looks like is that's enough material to fill the Rose Bowl. So one of the plants in California uses enough material to fill the Rose Bowl. Overall in California, we can fill the Rose Bowl or a professional stadium 25 times on an annual basis. There's no other use for this material. And if these plants continue to shut down, or, you know, we don't get the long-term contracts that we need, what are we supposed to do with material as Californians and across the nation? The other states are facing some of the same issues. So
how many plants, like an estimate, how many biomass plants are in the California area that are functioning?
There's 23 operational in California. I think at one point there was like 66.
Wow. So that many have shut down, and how many years have they been shutting down for?
A lot of them, because a lot of these plants were built in the 80s and we, you know, signed a 30-year contract, a lot of them shut down, you know, the teens. So 15, 16, 17, that time frame. Gotcha. A lot of plants shut down that time frame. A lot of plants got recontracted, but not all of them. So
the power that is generated from those 23 biomass plants, is it strictly for California? Is it local?
Yeah. So, you know, when our plants produce power, they support the local grid. There's actually a plant that kept a community online with power while we had some major storms. And I think at the time there was a fire that knocked out some power lines. They were able to keep that local community in energy. And this is remote, way up in the mountains in the forest. And they were able to keep that community with power. So other than that, you know, our power just goes out on the grid and, you know, supports California. And it's, you know, it's biomass energy is considered renewable. So it fulfills the energy portfolio, those renewable energy portfolios that are, you know, required of utilities and other, you know, small providers.
Do you know what percentage of energy consumption it accounts for in California?
Or maybe on a
national scale?
Even? Yeah, on a national scale, I had to look that up. Biomass energy is only about 5% of the power in the United States, but it accounts for a lot of the renewable energy in the United States. I think it's in the 40 percentile.
Okay.
So it's small in the grand scale, but, you know, as our country kind of moves towards renewable energy, it's we're at the table. The biomass industry is at the table.
Right. So what are the typical applications for the energy generated by biomass? I know that you mentioned that it kept one of the communities running during a certain time. I don't know if it's allocated differently than, you know, natural gas or how that works.
No, I mean, it's essentially same as natural gas, like a gas turbine. You know, they're putting their megawatts, their power on the grid. We do the same. There are some special scenarios where, you know, there are some of these biomass to power, these power plants that are co-located next to some of the sawmills in California. So they might use some of that power to run their own equipment inside the sawmill, and then the excess will go out to the grid. But in the most cases, the power goes out to the grid like any other, any other power plant. Of course, electricity goes to the local community, but overall goes to the California grid.
And then, everything comes with its challenges. So what are, kind of some of the obstacles that biomass power plants have, and then even just working with biomass as a fuel?
Yes, that's a great question. So biomass power plants, there is a lot of moving parts as you compare them to, just say a gas turbine. There's a lot of moving parts. There's large conveyors, there's large dozers and rolling stock, there's large fans, large pumps. It takes a lot of maintenance and I guess it takes a lot to maintain and operate the equipment needed to run these plants. Along with all that equipment, because it takes so much, it takes a large team to operate and maintain. So I can tell you that some of the plants that we operate, they're about 24 megawatts, which in the grand scheme is pretty small, but we have 27 full-time employees on site. And saying that, it's not a linear scale when it talks to like megawatts versus employees. I helped out with the plant out in Georgia, and it was 16 megawatts, 8 megawatts less than other plants, but it had 20 full-time employees there. So it takes a lot, and there's a lot of labor involved in making sure these plants run. On top of that, I kind of grew up to this industry. So, when I became a board qualified operator, it took me about 3 to 4 years to get trained, because there's a lot of moving parts that a control room operator is in charge of at these plants. It isn't like there's just one piece of equipment or two pieces of equipment. It's, 20, 30, 100 pieces of equipment that you're looking at to make sure it's running, make sure it's doing what it needs to do to keep the plant online.
And you're trained like individually on each one of those?
Yes. Wow. Yes. So yeah, you start out, when you get into operations, you start as a outside operator or auxiliary operator, and you're out there, you're the ones turning the valves and doing physical checks on a piece of equipment, and you learn all about it. And it's, we say at least in our plants that there's hundreds of miles of pipe, water pipe, conduit, that kind of stuff that an operator needs to know every single bump on every single pipe out there. So it does take some time and some training and just dedication. You got to go out there and you have to want to learn it. At the end of the day, it makes your job easier.
Right. That makes sense.
It's a lot. So.
And then, so are there challenges specific to biomass as a fuel?
So, the handling of the material on site, that I think, most places have that squared away. We know how to do it. It's on the sourcing side that I think is a big challenge. So, in California, the U.S. Forest Service or a utility goes out and does a line clearing, and it's way out there, remote, out in the middle of the forest. They got to get the material down. They got to load it somehow onto a truck and bring it down to somewhere where they can grind it, and then from grinding down to the power plants. These roads are out there aren't fully developed. They're old logging roads or just dirt roads. And, weather like Northern California right now, we've been experiencing some really heavy rain. They're not doing work up there. So that concerns some of the biomass plants, because it's like, do I have enough material to make it through this wet season? Because I'm not getting stuff from the forest. Saying all that, it also takes on transportation. And right now, transportation is expensive because diesel prices have increased over the years. And at the end of the day, the biomass plants, we pay for that material. And the biggest influence on that is diesel prices to get the material off the hills or down to the power plants. And, just to kind of put it in perspective is, you just kind of simplify an annual budget of, you have your operating and maintenance costs, you have your labor, and you have your fuel source. some of these plants, the fuel is more than half of the annual budget. So it's a big portion of it. So that is I guess one of the challenges with biomass. On top of that, you know, our material comes from multiple suppliers, and it's just, you know, you don't go down to one store and say, okay, I need 10 tons of material or whatnot. It's, you know, 30, 40 different suppliers. And those 30 or 40 different suppliers have different pricing. And because of where they're coming from or the type of material, on top of that, it's also the quality of the material changes with each supplier. Even sometimes it could be the same supplier, but each truck, the quality changes. So we need to pay attention to that, because the quality of the material, the quality of the fuel that's coming into our plants really changes how the boilers operate. And that's something that, I mean, we have a full-time position at our plants, and most plants have a full-time position of essentially a fuel buyer, fuel managers going out there, ensuring we're getting the quality, ensuring that the delivery on their contracts and bringing the right material. So those are some of the challenges, you know, at least from my perspective, working with biomass.
So what happens if there's a shortage of supply? Like you said, like if, you know, you're going through the wet season and there's not enough, what goes on then?
We try to be as predictive as possible, right?
Sure.
We know, but there are days. So typically we, you know, it'll change per plant, but the plants that I work with, typically we aim for about 30 days of material on the ground. You know, on the ground, meaning at the site, at the plant. There are times that I've seen where we have 4 days of material, and that makes everyone nervous. But, you know, one of the plants got to where we might have enough material to make it through the day. And there's really, I mean, at that point, you're scrambling, you're calling all your suppliers, you're going, do you have anything? What do you have out there? And then you're calling other plants saying, hey, do you have some fuel that we can have? We'll buy it from you, you know? So you try to stay on top of it. Sometimes it's just like the rains we got in early 23 and the rains we're getting now, there's only so much you can do. You know, overall, if everyone's low on inventory, it's going to be really hard to get material. So unfortunately, sometimes you got to turn the plant down and, you know, come down on low, derate a little bit, or in some cases, they'll shut down and build up inventory and kind of try to predict what the weather is going to do. And then, okay, we're going to shut down for 2 days, build some inventory, and then restart the plant. Obviously, we don't want to ever get in that situation. So
right.
That is the fuel buyer, fuel managers, like, that's their job. Like, make sure we have enough fuel and make sure it's the right stuff.
And then, so kind of looking forward, I mean, top of mind for everyone is, you know, net zero future, decarbonization. So you kind of referenced this in the beginning, but how does biomass fit into, you know, a sustainable future? And then where are the opportunities for this industry?
Through the EPA, biomass is considered renewable energy. You know, we're helping with that sustainable future. But, you know, looking forward, you know, is there things that we can do at our plants? Absolutely. You know, can we make our plants more environmental friendly? Absolutely. But, you know, the issue there and what a lot of plants are facing is we need long-term contracts. You know, a 3-year contract or a 5-year contract doesn't help us out. Because, you know, at the end of the day, we are a business and ownership needs to be able to get the return. They're going to, you know, spend a bunch of capital on these plants to improve them. They need to see the return. If not, they don't want to do it. Why would they? You know, it doesn't make business sense. That's part of it. And that's something that, you know, we spend a lot of time in Sacramento, our industry, kind of saying that to hopefully the right people, that we need long-term contracts. On the other side, there's a lot of smart people out there taking biomass and, you know, instead of just putting it into the boiler, making steam, turning a turbine, they're talking about, you know, turning it into biogas or gasification. There are companies out there, they're taking biomass and making it into sustainable aviation fuel or hydrogen. And, you know, in my opinion, that is the future. You know, that is something that the biomass industry is going to morph into. It's not going to happen in the next few years. It's going to take some time for them to scale up to what we're currently doing. You know, going back to, you know, utilizing that Rose Bowl equivalent of material. But I think it's important that we kind of have to be these new players. We got to kind of be like their older brothers out there, older siblings. We're in the industry. We know the players. We know where the fuel is. We know how to handle it. We know how to get off the hills or down the road. And, you know, these people are looking to us going, okay, we need to get the fuel and we're going to do something a little bit different. We're going to make power, or we're going to make, you know, renewable gas, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, I think it's important for us to really partner with these companies and, you know, help them progress and, you know, be at the table when, you know, whatever, it might not be in my lifetime, but when it transitions over to your traditional biomass plant making steam to making some kind of renewable gas or gasification in general. These are really smart people. I've talked to a lot of them. I mean, literally rocket scientists, rocket engineers, used to work for SpaceX, and now
that's wild.
It's wild. And it's a small industry, and they're starting to know the players at least in California, it's very small. Typically everyone knows everyone. And these are the new kids on the block, and we're welcoming them with open arms and like, come on, come join the family. You know, we're trying to do something right here. And it's been great. I mean, those guys are, I'm going to say smart, like that's an understatement. These guys are brilliant. Like they'll start talking to me, I'm like, I don't even understand what you're talking about right now. So
I like your sibling analogy. I think that's a really good visual.
Yes.
Okay, well, that pretty much wraps up my questions. I really enjoy talking with you, Chris. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Yeah, appreciate being here.
Thank you to our audience for tuning in today. I'm your host, Alyssa Narpody, and we'll see you next time.